Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot. Don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah.
No. Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
All right. It is just after 9 o'clock on this Thursday evening. It's Adrian with you until 10, and it's the football show all the way. We're going to be joined in just a little bit by Karen Duggan to look back at the Republic of Ireland's 1-0 defeat in that international friendly in Tala this evening, an early goal conceded to Denmark, and that was the way it finished. It was, I think, in many ways, a fairly positive performance from the Republic of Ireland team. We'll get Karen's thoughts on that a little bit later on, and looking ahead to Belgium as well, another big test. I know that Vera Powell had spoken about wanting to test her players over the course of these two games. She's certainly going to get that, and again with Belgium as well in the next few days. So we'll get Karen's thoughts on exactly what happened out in Tala today. So all that is to come. Please do get your thoughts into us. Delighted to say that Vinnie Perth is on the line. Evening, Vinnie.
Evening. How you doing, Adrian? How's things?
Good. How are you getting on?
Yeah, not too bad. Keeping busy.
Good man. Are you watching the golf?
Mixture of golf, Manchester United, trying to have as many different windows open as possible. So
it's difficult.
Brighton, the Masters, just turn on, show some live golf, and but they've been, you know, this
the featured
this
group stuff
in the background. Yeah. So, yeah. But it is what you expected. It's going to be really, really tight. And Shane Lowry flying, thank God. So that looks good.
He's going really well. Somebody did, we were talking about it at the top of the show, and somebody did text into us to say that you can jump on the website. And the app is one of the greatest apps of all time, by the way. And they do, actually, you can get in there and sort of segment out if you're looking to follow Lowry, for example. You mentioned you've been watching a bit of United. They're 1-0 up half-time.
Yeah, they've been comfortable enough, to be fair, to... Granada, they from set pieces, they've been really inventive and they've tried different bits and pieces. But to be fair, Manchester, you know, they've been comfortable enough. They've gone strong enough with the team. Obviously, this is a big competition for them and it would be a massive boost in the arm if they can win it. When you look at the teams left, you would say you could be heading for United Ajax maybe final. So if they can get there. So it looks good for them at the moment and they're comfortable enough.
Okay, well, look, keep a half eye on that and we'll keep chatting to you about loads of other stuff. Some of the other scores: Arsenal and Slavia Prague 0-0 about 5 minutes into the second half there. Ajax, you mentioned, 1-0 up on Roma, and Dinamo Zagreb 1-0 down at home to Villarreal, the latest score there, with the second half just underway. So we'll keep people up to speed with that as we go through it. Plenty to talk to you about, Vinny. We're going to talk a little bit of League of Ireland in a bit. Want to get your thoughts as well on Keith Andrews' comments on the TV during the week about the Republic of Ireland and that conversation that isn't going anywhere anytime soon. But some reflections on Champions League maybe to begin with, on Liverpool particularly, 3-1 down, obviously heading into their quarterfinal return leg next Wednesday. We were talking to John Giles earlier and I asked him off the top if there was any way back for Liverpool, and he was actually somewhat positive about it.
Yeah, I think this Liverpool team can do, and we've seen it over many years, Liverpool and Anfield can do some magical things. Listen, I'd say they'd love whatever the capacity is now. Is it 52,000? They'd love that place absolutely rocking, but it won't be. So they're going to have to sort of create their own atmosphere. But there is frailties in Real Madrid. There's frailties in the back four. Albeit we didn't really see it, but that was more down to... I was just shocked how poor Liverpool started the first half. I'm very surprised to see Keita starting. I understand he obviously went for legs in midfield to get around the place, but he didn't play well. And but not just him, Wijnaldum kept giving the ball away. Fabinho in midfield was poor. And Antoine Mane, him and the referee seemed to have a running battle, and he felt sorry for himself in the game. And it's the worst I've seen Mane play in a long time. I'm surprised to see Jota being taken off. And I suppose that's partly what you're starting to see with Klopp. We're starting to question some of his decisions. Sticking with Fabinho at centre-half for so long. And so there's been a couple of things where he's been questioned this year. But listen, there's no doubt Liverpool can turn that tie around. They're good enough to do it.
is the Keita stuff a sign of like greater jitters there, Vinny, in a way, like when the heat comes on and in the typical run of events when Liverpool are going along quite nicely, that it's not the sort of move that he'd make, that he's confident enough that his team can get through, that Thiago's the man to do it, he's got the pedigree, but that now the little cracks are beginning to appear, he's kind of reaching for stuff that isn't really fitting the bill.
Yeah, look, I was really surprised by the change in the team. I thought once you bring Fabinho and Wijnaldum into that team, I think you can carry a Thiago. And ultimately, that's why he brought Thiago into the club, was to break down defences and make things happen. Thiago's a brilliant range of pass. I know he struggled for Liverpool. I'm not saying he's necessarily fixes all the problems, but Keita just hasn't happened for him at Liverpool. He's been many injuries. He hasn't played enough football recently, and he just looked off. And as a manager, that horrible decision of taking someone off before half time really is difficult, but it was the right thing to do. And I think Liverpool were better second half as a result of it. And albeit they gave away some sloppy goals, but in the first half, and they've given themselves an uphill battle. But as a manager, yeah, like once you don't win stuff or you don't win games, you're open to be criticised. And we're starting to see that with him now. And as I said, the centre-half decisions were crazy earlier on. I still can't understand them. And now the Keita decision, like it wasn't as if Real Madrid with sort of the midfield they have and the age profile of the team were going to run all over Liverpool. They definitely could have carried Thiago a bit.
Did you ever have to take anyone off before halftime?
Yeah, I did. I remember, like it was earlier on in my own career, it was 3 or 4 games in. We actually played UCD and we were losing 1-0, and it was about 25 minutes into the game, and we had a huge injury list. We lost Patrick McElhinney, Robbie Benson, Chris Shields had damaged his medial ligaments. So 3 of them were huge players, and Jamie McGrath was coming back from an injury and he'd only trained 3 or 4 days and he was on the bench. And I took off Jordan Flores after about 25 minutes and we went on to win the game. I think it was 3-1. And so it was a lot easier then. I had to have a hard discussion with Jordan, but it is the biggest insult to do to any player. And it's a long way back in terms of the relationship between the manager and the player. And it's difficult, but you're on a stronger footing, obviously, if you win and things go well as a result of it. But you know deep down how much it hurts a player. It's usually disappointing for him. But thankfully, myself and Jordan rebuilt that relationship over time, and ultimately we had a really strong relationship by the end of our time together.
Do you find that other players are looking at that going, I mean, I could see that going one of about 4 different ways. You know, are they looking at it going, geez, this guy's ruthless, I need to up my game? Are they looking at it going, I can't believe they've done this to this guy, it's a show of disloyalty? I mean, I could see it playing out in several different ways.
Well, it can play it in several different ways. What you have to be careful of is you have to make the decision for the right reason. Mm. And to be fair, even Klopp was speaking about last night, it could have been Wijnaldum, who just kept giving the ball away. He was really poor. It could have been Fabinho. But ultimately, they have more credit in the bank. So what you can't do is take someone off that you feel is weak, or you know that, or you don't want it to be messaged to be feel like that. So it can play out hundreds of different ways. Yes, players can respect you if the decision goes right. And but it's only something like in 18 months in charge. And I'm trying to rack my brain. I don't think in the 8 years Stephen done it once. Maybe he did. Mm. But between the two of us, we probably only made the decision once. So I only think you get away with it maybe once or twice. And that's it. You know, you have to move on from it very quickly.
And I presume because you're resisting it, human nature, you're resisting whatever. You're really hoping that every minute that goes past that you haven't taken him off, that he's going to turn the corner and make you leave him on. I presume that there's a lot of second guessing that goes on before you do that. It's not it's not work, let's go. I presume that there's a fair bit of second guessing there.
Yeah, absolutely. And listen, you're in a moment there on the sideline, and I made the decision. And the staff rightly said to me, "You sure is this the right decision?" I says, "Yeah, we have to do it." There's this thing of let's get to half time and we fix it then. Mm-hmm. But that's nonsense. Like that could cost you. You could be 2-0 down and never get the result back. So you've got to make the decision. If it's the right decision, you have to stand over it. And listen, it doesn't always work out. There's times where it won't work out. But I was lucky it worked out. Well, what you've got to do as a manager in that situation is sort of make the decision for the right reasons. If you're making it for the right reasons, well, then you'll stand over it all day long.
Yeah, it's easy when you win 3-1 as well, isn't it?
Easier. Yeah. Well, you still got the huge questions of rebuilding the relationship after.
Yeah.
I mean, and what you can't do is start high fiving everybody and think you're great. You do, like, I remember going into the dressing room after the game, and I felt I let Jordan down in that decision, you know, and I was very clear with the players. It's not something I was comfortable with. And that's, you have to start very quickly rebuilding relationships because, you know, players don't like it happening to their teammate as well. I'm sure Keita has friends in that Liverpool dressing room who are going, you know, and you always get someone saying to you, oh, it should have been Wijnaldum that got taken off, or it should have been Fabinho. And, you know, you get that sort of. So Klopp's man management, we hear, is brilliant. So we'll be tested with Keita this week.
Yeah, and Thiago had a positive impact when he came in as well. You mentioned earlier on that Liverpool didn't really test the Real centre backs, and that's, like, almost outside of the Keita stuff, it's nearly the biggest indictment of how poor they were, because obviously Madrid themselves, without their two main centre backs, why do you think that was, or like how does it come about, or what could Liverpool have done differently, like when Klopp is reviewing that game in terms of his own approach, what should he have done to test them a bit more?
Like, he had 55% of the ball over the 90 minutes, so the opportunities were there to hurt Madrid. Like, that's normally when you play Real Madrid, and particularly in English club, you're not going to have that same possession. So you had opportunities. It was just too slow. It was lethargic. Too many misplaced passes. And then the big thing is the way Madrid hurt them. If you look at the first goal, it's a long ball over the top. And they get in behind between the centre half and Trent Alexander. So once a team does that and quickly counter attacks you like that, you've got a little bit of fear that it's about to happen again. So you become a little bit more conservative. And what makes Liverpool great for many years is they're not conservative. Fullbacks are very high up the pitch, and you go and get that team. So I think they were too slow. Their press, why you put Keita into the team, was all about the press, getting after teams. And they just weren't able to press Real Madrid in what Klopp calls heavy metal football. They just weren't able to do that. And it'd be wrong to say it wasn't a normal Liverpool performance, because we've seen that over this season at different stages. But it was a lack of intensity. And there are buzzwords like lack of intensity, too slow, not on the front foot. But when you're reviewing that from Liverpool's point of view, unfortunately, they're the words that really come out and explain the best.
Yeah.
Just no intensity in their play.
So, like, taking that into account then, and coupling it with the fact that probably teams have not just started to figure Liverpool out, but have been for a while, and they haven't really been able to respond to that, is all of that fixed by some players coming back in? Some of the high-profile players have been missing, particularly defensively, and the positive impact that has? Or is there, like, a bigger job at work here for Klopp?
Well, I suppose time will tell. So we don't know, in one sense, what the mindset of someone like Mane is. Like, I haven't seen Mane smile all year. It's really, like, his body language and that stuff doesn't look good. We've seen some of the stuff Salah is doing in terms of his interviews and different bits and pieces. There's no doubt it's been a loss. But and I've been on with the lads on Off the Ball in the morning, and I've explained some of Liverpool problems are down to the centre-half issue, and it's a massive issue. But they haven't conceded goals with Kabak and Phillips in the team, and Fabinho in that sort of number six position. But ultimately, is Kabak and Phillips going to win the Champions League? It's highly unlikely because of they're not good enough, or they're not at the highest level. Now, you can win Champions League with average centre-halves. History of football would tell you that. But you need everything to go your way. And when you look at Liverpool at the very best, the two full-backs, as I was saying, Trent Alexander and Robinson, high up the pitch. But they always had real pace in Gomez and Van Dijk, and even if one of them was missing, they always had one of them with that bit of pace to deal with the counter-attack. And I think they've lost that pace out of back four. And it's been huge. It's a huge blow for them. And Madrid exploited them perfectly in terms of the position of Junior for the goal. He didn't play on the sort of left wing. He played narrow in between Trent Alexander and Phillips. And when you look at the ball over the top, it's in between the two of them. Not enough pace to deal with it. Touch, chest and volley, and it's 1-0 and you're chasing the game. And it was perfect by Zidane. His tactics were spot on, and he knew how to hurt Liverpool.
Yeah, what's you've mentioned a few times about Trent Alexander-Arnold. What's your sense of, like there was so much chat about him in advance of the game, and, you know, was he going to make Gareth Southgate's Euro squad, and a lot of speculation about that. I mean, he's in a far worse position in that conversation today than he was in advance of the game. What's your sense of how that plays out, and like that conversation about his defensive duties versus how good he is going forward?
Well, like it's a big debate, and I listen to some of that Sky stuff, and it's great and all, and it's fancy, and it's two different opinions of Neville and Carragher, and far be it for me to question them, but I think there was a lot of hot air around that discussion. I think they missed the main point of it all. Is it and Neville, to be fair, alluded to it a little bit. Depends what you want. Like, there's no doubt Liverpool would not be as successful as they were over a two-year period, Champions League winners and Premiership winners, if it wasn't for the attacking play of Trent Alexander. It just wouldn't happen. And the modern-day fullback has to give you that. Has to give you that and get at people. That's like a style of play. It's not everyone's cup of tea. For me, and go back to the League of Ireland for a second, when you look at someone like Sean Gannon for Dundalk for 8 years, he gets to the end line every game 7, 8, 9 times, same way as Trent does. And you almost don't care about his defensive work, because the knock-on effect to doing that is the opposition have to drop off. Now, so that's a way of playing, and I love that style, and I would back that all day. I think that's being positive and go and win the game from that situation. Now, there is another train of thought in football that you'd be a bit more conservative in your fullbacks, etc., etc. Don't necessarily agree with that, and I think that's harder to win league titles, win European championships, win FA Cups, etc. When you look at Man City, who he's being compared to, I would say, if Man City get to the Champions League final, Cancelo is the first choice right back, because he's attack minded. Now Cancelo may play left back because they've got issues there, and Kyle Walker will come into the team. But I would say Cancelo starts for Manchester City more than Kyle Walker in Pep's first team, if that makes sense. If he's not resting anybody, not on him. So you're talking about Jurgen Klopp and Pep Guardiola would be very much in favour of the attacking fullback. So I'm in favour of that. But there's no doubt Trent needs to work on his defensive end of the game. He needs to. We've seen all those silly videos, etc. He's got to work on fast feet. He's got to get himself closer to people, stop crosses. And like the second goal, the misplaced header, that can happen to anybody. Mistakes happen in football. But we're talking about England winning the European Championships. And when you look at the last European Championship final, Bakary Sagna was playing, I think, for France. And Portugal had Sorze playing for him, who was at Southampton, went on loan to, I don't know, went on loan to Lazio, is now ended up at Arsenal, but hasn't played in 3 or 4 years. So it's just a comparison to say, what Southgate done was turn the floodlights on this player. He threw him under the bus in the sense of in front of the media. He highlighted everything. It would have been such more man management that that player should have been. He's having a difficult time at his club. We're going to rest him. We're going to let him focus on certain things at Liverpool. And when he fixes that, he will be providing his form comes back, etc. He could have worded it in a way. But he basically told the world he was dropped and turned the floodlights on the player. And I don't know whether there's a way back for Trent now in terms of him and Gareth's relationship. I would imagine it's very, very difficult to rebuild. And I think it's a massive loss for England. You want to win games. Certain games you've got to go and win. You can't just be defensive-minded. Yeah. And I'd rather him in the team more than any other right-back, probably in world football.
Wow. His confidence must be on the floor as well now. I mean, like, that's, as you say, all playing itself out in public. You've the two highest profile pundits in the game of the UK going at it about him live on TV. As you say, it's a very impassioned conversation, and obviously one person is
I don't think the Sky stuff helps him. Like, I don't think Carragher taking his side and Neville, to be fair to Neville, he said he should be in the squad, but I don't think that helps the player. It's bringing on attention that's just not needed, and it's must be awful to live in that, because you're putting more pressure on the player coming up against the really strong Madrid team, and he's like, geez, if I make one mistake now, it's going to be highlighted. And it was, because you know, you look at the mistakes John Stone has made. He's been brilliant this year. Makes a small mistake, it's sort of brushed over because he's given the chance to repair it, and there isn't a huge discussion over it. So I actually really feel sorry for the player. I think he's been put in an extremely difficult situation, and you must remember, he's a Champions League winner, he's a Premiership League winner. For someone so young, he's done all right, to be fair to him.
Yeah, he'll come good as well, is the thing. And he might not still be Gareth Southgate's player, but he'll come good. The confidence will come back. And I think particularly with some of the players we mentioned earlier on that are missing from that Liverpool team, when they get back into it, it'll be better for him as well. Some of the other stuff before we talk some briefly international and a bit of League of Ireland from the Champions League during the week. City, how impressed were you by them, Vinny? Are you looking at them thinking these are contenders in waiting, given how they gritted it out at the end?
I think they've got a job just to get through against Dortmund. They really do.
Right.
I'm not sure they're through yet. I think, I'd love to see this team win every trophy. I want Pep Guardiola, and people say he's loads of money, etc., and that's what they always throw at you. But he's put together a team, he's rebuilt the team, he's rebuilt the style of play that, for me as a coach, I love watching them. I analyse them to get all the different movements of players, etc. But they've got a hell of a job to do just to get through this tie. I was shocked how well, in one sense, Dortmund done. I thought, if you look at Dortmund from a tactical point of view, they nullified a lot of City's play. They sort of forced them wide. And that doesn't necessarily suit City too much. They want to play inside and little underlaps, etc. So it's a tie that's still alive. But what they do have is, for me, along with Mbappe, they've probably one of the best players in the world, and Kevin De Bruyne. I said it a couple of months back after we'd done the City and Chelsea game. If you're a manager of any club and you're told you have one player from any other team, I'm picking De Bruyne now over anyone else, and probably Mbappe only second. Obviously, Messi and Ronaldo were outstanding, but as they come to the end of their career, I think the quality from De Bruyne is that good. He could win them a Champions League, and he could be involved, and it could be one of the most special seasons for City this year, and he could win everything. But big jobs to do in the second leg.
Just as you're talking there about the quality of City, the battle they have ahead, we're touching on a bit of Real Madrid, Liverpool. Who's the best coach in world football at the minute?
I still think you've got to say Pep is, in terms of the rebuilding of City, in terms of, you know, when things weren't working, he started to play Cancelo. So he goes from a 4-3-3, puts Cancelo into that central midfield position for Roy Full. He plays with a false number nine. You know, what he's doing with some of the players like Foden, Sterling, they've all improved under him. De Bruyne has improved so much under him. John Stones now is back to his very best. I would say he is definitely there, but like it's so fickle at the highest level that I think Jurgen Klopp this time next year could have a case that if he rebuilds this Liverpool team, wins a Premiership or somehow wins a Champions League this year and backs it up again next year with a Premiership back, you're talking about really fine margins there. But I think the two of them are there. I think Zidane has been dealt a difficult hand, the messing that's gone on at Real Madrid. But I tell you what, every time Zidane has been challenged, I think he's proved himself as a tactically an unbelievable coach. I think he is someone that he may look to move to a different club and just talk to Juventus and try a different challenge, because I'm sure he's frustrated at some of the things going on above his level in Real Madrid. But for me, Zidane is in that sort of upper echelons, and we'll see if he can maybe win a Champions League this year with an average enough Real Madrid side. That's because whoever wins that tie will play Chelsea, who aren't that good, most likely. There's a Champions League final at stake for the winner, Dublin Real.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on it. Zidane just doesn't seem to ever get the plaudits maybe that he deserves. United still 1-0 up, by the way. Still nil all between Arsenal and Slavia Prague as well. The conversation during the week on Virgin Media Sport, Vinny, I don't know if you caught it, but Keith Andrews was on, obviously Ireland assistant coach, and been asked about events of the last month, and pushed particularly by Niall Quinn about the balance of the age profile of the squad, and that maybe we would have benefited from having some of the older heads in, particularly in the first two games. What's your sense of that? I mean, I know Shane Duffy was mentioned, obviously, specifically as somebody who hasn't been performing for his club, but that, you know, Niall would have played with a lot of players who weren't necessarily, you know, world beaters and would have come in for Ireland and always raised their game. There was a lot of ifs, ands and buts, I suppose, about the points that Niall was making. But your sense of whether we would have benefited from a couple of older heads in those first two games?
I don't know whether. I think the argument was lost somewhere in the middle. I'm not sure I necessarily agree with Niall, but at the same time, I don't necessarily agree with Keith. So, and that's football, I suppose, isn't it? It's about opinions. But there was certainly a certain amount of experience there. I just think Niall's the point about, I suppose there's two points, and he never got around to the discussion. What, like the change in shape, the logic of that, and what was the thinking behind it. So I understood it away in Serbia. There were a point that worked quite well. But at home to Luxembourg, I thought the change of shape was more important than actually the personnel. And then ultimately, as a knock-on effect of the 3-5-1-2 or 3-4-1-2 sort of shape we played in the Luxembourg game, the knock-on effect was then of the lack of experience in terms of, I've made this point before, like Kieran Clark passed the ball more times than any other player he passed to Enda Stevens, okay? Hmm. Enda Stevens passed the ball, his highest, I don't know if I'm putting this right, but he made more passes to any other player than he went back to Clark,
right?
Okay? But Josh Cullen, he passed the ball, his most popular pass, that's the best way of putting it, his most popular pass was to Kieran Clark.
Right.
So as a number six, and he never switched to play once in the whole game to Matt Doherty, for argument's sake, who only played 45 minutes, of course. So the knock-on effect of that was, that, and the point about that being inexperienced is when you've got him and Jason Knight in that sort of 3-4-3 shape, if you want to call it, them two, Jason Knight and Josh Cullen, I've got to drive you, got to take some risks, got to pass. You hear all these buzzwords between the lines, etc., etc. But you also need Stevens and Doherty much, much higher up the pitch. And we never got them there. Now, there's a combination of different reasons for that. So I think that's a bigger argument than actually the personnel. So, you know, because you can make an argument that, you know, there was a certain amount of, like Kieran Clark is an experienced Premiership player, and Keith used that example. He spoke about James Coleman, Matt Doherty, and the Stevens. So it is a point to a point, but I think the bigger question is why at home to Serbia that we were so negative effectively, and our passing was so slow on our foot. Like, we should have went back. I think systems are all well and good. Teams, the very best teams like Chelsea can play a system of whatever system they want, or Man City, and they don't really care if the opposition know. But we're not that good, and we have to be adaptable to situations. And I think we should have went a 4-3-3 system. We look at someone like Callum Robinson, who hasn't played football, played 90 minutes in Serbia, and looked really lethargic in the second game. So for me, there are bigger questions I would ask than necessarily the experienced argument. You know, yes, Niall has a point, but I think there's a bigger discussion to have. Why? And listen, to be fair to whether it's Keith or Stephen, they don't have to answer them questions, but they're the ones I think are are more important to us, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes total sense. And there's loads in it that we'll definitely come back to, because we'll have plenty of time to chat about them again. But with the few minutes we've left, I did want to touch on the League of Ireland and to the games this weekend. Vinny, even looking at Friday night, obviously Dundalk Bowls is one that catches the eye. Hard to get past the injury to Brian Gartland and the impact that Dundalk will have without him.
Yeah, look, Brian's not just... Brian, I don't know what the right word is, but he's a legend of that sort of club, the town, the dressing room. He's very important to you there. For me, as an assistant manager or even as a manager, huge success with Brian. So I think that's a massive blow. He'll still be around the place in his rehab, et cetera, et cetera. But it's not the same. So that's a huge blow, I think, for Dundalk. He had struggled in pre-season and he was finding his feet. Back in the team. I think you need experienced players, especially with the difficult time they're going through. This is a difficult weekend for them. The results haven't been good enough, there's no doubt about it. They've played three, again, going back to shapes and systems, but they played this three at the back. The form hasn't been good enough with it. Question is, did he change shape and go back to their best? Second half against Shamrock Rovers, who are more like Dundalk. They play the 4-3-3 sort of system. I think it suits their better players. And I've seen Bowls quite a lot. They've had a difficult time in the off-season, lost a lot of players. But Twardock and Grant and Casey's a huge loss for them. But to be fair to Bowls, they've got good management, good structure in the club, a lot of good young players. And I think people are going to have to be patient with Bowls. But it's a huge game for both of them, managers and clubs, this weekend, because after four games, one of them could be on 1 point, and that's just simply not good enough for them two clubs.
Who's going to win it?
You would have to say Dundalk are favourites. The second half performance against Rovers was good enough most weeks to win games, so you would say they're favourites. As I said, I've seen Bowls twice. Much better against Pats, probably didn't deserve to lose, but Dundalk, we would say, are definitely favourites for that game.
And on Saturday, how do you see the Sligo Shamrock Rovers game going?
Yeah, I think Rovers look a little bit rusty at the moment. They lost to Jack Bourne, and more importantly, in a strange way, Aaron McAniff is huge for them. They were just okay against Dundalk, but the one thing they did do against Dundalk is they done what champions do. Didn't play brilliantly, but they won. And the others walk away going, we should have, could have. But the champions go and win games. So Sligo, again, haven't been brilliant, but the results have been excellent. And Liam has done a brilliant, brilliant job there. Looks like on paper a really good game, but I do fancy Rovers Cup and win, and maybe Borst Sligo's bubble. But is it Rovers against Rovers? There's a big debate about that one. But
Sligo versus Shamrock Rovers makes it easy for all of us.
Yeah, you know? Much easier.
It's like calling Vinicius just call him Junior Vinny. I find
I still can't pronounce Vinicius. You know, a Cuba Rayoff fan, I'm just not great on that foot.
I skipped
it.
And still 1-0. Any major events in the Granada United game that you've seen?
No, and I think it's actually a quite mature performance from United. I think Scott McTominay comes into the team and he gives them that sort of front of the back four, that sort of platform. So, look, they're comfortable enough. There's no real threat. There's 15 minutes left. So, if you leave me now, Ronaldo will probably win 4-1. So, but at the moment, United are comfortable and look like, to be fair, they've had an easy enough. Certainly not a game like last night's Paris Saint-Germain and Bayern Munich, which was I'm a nerd, okay, football nerd, so I've studied that match all day long. I've been making video clips of it, etc. And I know I need to get a life, but what a game that was! You're certainly
what are you looking out for when you're taking video clips?
Oh, I suppose it's more the shape of the two teams, where the difference was at the highest level. I'm noticing the Pochettino effect. So what I mean by that is Paris Saint-Germain were so disciplined. Even Neymar, without the ball, he went into nearly a 4-4-2 shape, and Neymar's job to sort of stop Kimmich in front of them playing, that was really... And then as the game wore on, they stopped doing that and allowed Bayern to sort of take over. The restarts from people are discussing, like, Ireland shouldn't be able to restart or retake short kickouts, etc. But the first goal comes from a brilliant goal kick. It's just a simple goalkeeper goes short, someone goes close, and then clips over the head. Neymar, brilliant run inside. And yes, Neuer should do better, but it's just brilliant play. And it's why the very top coaches want their goalkeepers playing out short, because they feel there's more space around the pitch. So I suppose it's just for me, it's understanding that spatial awareness and seeing is there anything you can learn from it. And madly, you always think, if I was managing Bayern, what would I do? Or if I was managing Paris Saint-Germain, what would I do? As much as a few people will tell you I'm mad for thinking that way, but you have to. That's part of the game. So second leg of that will be fascinating. And hopefully Lewandowski is back, because I'd like to see Bayern do well, even though I sort of like what Pochettino's doing with the, albeit some of the league results have been up and down, I like what Pochettino's doing with Paris Saint-Germain.
Yeah. The next gig you get, Vinny, you can be just like, listen, do what Mbappe does, right? Look, I have a clip here. You just copy that and we'll be fine.
Yeah, no, I've tried that a few times with Pat Hoogan, but he sort of doesn't listen to me.
Yeah, listen, we all wish we could play that way. Vinny, always take something from listening to you. Thanks a million. Really enjoyed it.
All right, thanks a lot.
Thanks a lot. Vinny Perth on the line there with plenty of interesting stuff to say. We have Karen Duggan on the way to reflect on the Republic of Ireland 0, Denmark 1.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
All right, you're welcome back. It's Adrian Mathias this evening. Quick check on some of the scores around the Europa League. United still 1-0 up at Granada from that Marcus Rashford goal. Arsenal 1 up at home to Slavia Prague. That goal going in there just in the last couple of moments. So it could be a big win for Mikel Arteta. 1-1 between Ajax and Roma, and Villarreal 1 up at Dinamo Zagreb. Now, it was 1-0 to Denmark over the Republic of Ireland at Tala a bit earlier today. And to reflect on how things went for Vera Powell's side, Karen Duggan joins us on the line. Evening, Karen.
Hi, Adrian.
Talk to us about the one of the big things listening to Vera Powell in the lead into the game was about what they might be able to benefit from playing the bigger teams like Denmark and Belgium. So despite the result, what did she get out of the game tonight?
Yeah, I think that's interesting that you think you can get more out of these games when you're playing against higher opposition. I kind of think the opposite. I think we always do well against the teams that are that little bit better than us in the rankings. It's more we struggle with those that are in and around our own level. But Denmark are preparing for the Euros. They're really, really strong. They've got a world-class striker in Herder, one of the best I've seen in that 10 role. She was outstanding to watch today. And you were talking about PSG and Barca and the movement that was seen in that match. She really gave an exhibition in that 10 role today. But a lot of positives to take from the result. They conceded early, but they starved Denmark of too many clear-cut chances. I thought they were really solid at the back. Tried out a new formation, so Vera will get a lot of information from that. Had a few new players come in, a few girls come off the bench who did really, really well. Emily Whelan in particular, I was really impressed with, young Shell's striker. I think she's a really bright future ahead of her. And I think if she can get more experience in these upcoming friendlies, I think she could be one to break into the team.
Yeah, she came on at halftime, is that right?
She did, yeah. And Heather Payne had done an excellent job. I think Heather was probably one of the outstanding performers in the last campaign, and she was having a really good half. So I was surprised by the move at halftime. I'm not sure if it was injury or tiredness. Heather was coming obviously from America, a long journey back and everything that goes with that, but Emily came on and put in a really impressive performance. We all know who play against her in the league, all about her pace, and she's technically very good, but she also had a lot of grit and determination against a team where, like Denmark, who are physically as well as technically that bit superior, and she put herself about. So I definitely think she put her name in the pot for that striker position, especially if we're going to be going with that 5-3-2 formation where you are looking at two strikers and they also have to act as the outlet when you're under pressure, because obviously we're lacking that winger option if you do go with that formation.
Yeah, I was watching it at the many screens that are on the go here, and so watching out of the corner of my eye while the programme was ongoing. But it did seem at a time that Ireland were, even after Denmark had scored, like very, very dominant, and seemed to be very much on top in terms of possession and in terms of the field position as well. They were in that final third a lot, but not necessarily creating a huge amount.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of been a running theme. We are getting up the pitch a little bit better, but in terms of creating clear-cut chances, they're still at a premium. And I think we are just lacking that one creative player in a central position. For me, that person should be Katie McCabe. Katie is obviously doing wonderful things at Arsenal in that wing back position. I think she's the most assists in the WSL this year. But in Ireland, we're not as blessed with attacking talent and don't create as many opportunities as they do at Arsenal. So I'd prefer to see her further up the pitch. Our best, well, it was self-created by Katie herself. The best shot that we took was Katie in a central position from about 30 yards. So I'd like to see her be given more of a free role. She's taken on a lot of responsibility in that back line defensively and trying to get up the pitch. I think we're expecting an awful lot of her from there. And we are always solid at the back and we have plenty of talent on the bench who can play that full-back role or in centre half. But we are lacking, I think, that number 10 who can just make something of nothing. And for me, Katie McCabe is that player.
Okay. You mentioned the formation, the 5-3-2 tonight. Talk to us a bit about why tonight, I suppose. Maybe the friendly explains that, how much of a departure it is from previous and how it went.
I think there was positives and negatives. Positives, obviously, we kept Denmark to one goal. They did create a lot of chances, but there was bodies in the way. People putting in a really, really honest effort, getting back behind the ball. So there was a lot of support for the defence there. Where we struggled was when we were trying to get out. And I like that formation when you're playing an attacking team and when you can get those wing backs up really high and they're contributing. You're almost getting up there with your two strikers and your four up top. But today was never going to be a day for that. Denmark were always going to dominate possession. So it did mean a bank of five. Our centre mids did really honest work in defence, but they were lost then when we were trying to get into attack because we were lacking that number 10 and that wing outlet. So I think it showed that that's definitely a formation we can play if we want to apply a low block against teams who are superior against us.
Yeah.
But if we are going to have ambitions of getting forward and getting goals and not relying on set pieces, I'm not sure that would be the right formation for those teams that are better than us. I'd like to see us play it again against a team, again, more around our level where we'll be dominating possession and see, do we get more bodies into the box, more crosses in and get the likes of Katie and Kiva Keenan, who I thought was excellent as well. Can we get them higher up the pitch and see that what they can do in an attacking sense? Because we've got three really solid centre-backs there, Louise Quinn, Diane Caldwell, Niamh Fahy, abundance of experience, but we want to see what we can do going forward because we know what we can do defensively already.
Do you think will she show flexibility with that? Is it a case that, like horses for courses, it suits some of the better teams and maybe against teams that might be more on our level, we might play something slightly different? Or is she more looking at this formation as something that she wants to bring in pretty much across the board?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what she does against Belgium. Again, Belgium, an opposition of really high calibre. So if she sticks with this formation, it could be something that she's just going to employ when we're playing against those higher teams. I'd like to see it if she is going to stick with it. I'd like to see her continue on with it rather than chopping and changing. I don't think we fully had an identity in the last campaign. We were good at times in attack with a four at the back. We played with a five at the back against Germany. So I would like to see us just stick with one identity and really get that nailed down and get those partnerships nailed down. So it's hard to tell what her plan is now. The good thing is, though, is that she does have time. She has all of the summer. Obviously, we're not involved in the Euros to kind of bed down what she wants to do with this team.
Yeah. We're talking to Karen Duggan. We're talking about the Republic of Ireland 0, Denmark 1 and Tala tonight on Football and Off the Ball with thanks to Paddy Power for information on responsible gambling. You can visit gamblingcare.ie. Some conversation about the number one position, the goalkeeper position, Karen. Grace O'Malley tonight gets the nod again and seems to have done well.
Yeah, for me, Grace should have been number one throughout the whole of last campaign. She's been in and around the squad early days, even from when I started out. She's really, really experienced. And her performances for Reading over the past couple of seasons, it's not just a one-off this year. They've been really, really solid. She's consistently in that team of the league. And I was glad to see her get her opportunity. For me, it came a little bit late. But you could tell today she just has that confidence. She breeds confidence into her backline. She's vocal without being aggressive. It's very pointed. She's given direction to those in front of her. And she made some really, really good stops. The goal was unfortunate. I think she was a bit blindsided. It went in under her legs, but she kept us in the game for large parts of that first half when Denmark were really, really dominant in possession. And I think the fact that she's so good with her feet as well is a real, real bonus. The backs can really trust her if it takes a lot of pressure off. And it looked today like we were trying to play out from the back at times. And to do that, you need a really vocal, really confident keeper. And I think that's what Grace brings to the team. And I think we've been dying to settle on a number one. We were chopping and changing a little bit last campaign, and you want to really solidify that position. And for me, it's a no-brainer with Grace.
Yeah. What's your expectation now against Belgium on the weekend? It's a step up probably again. Are you thinking that maybe same formation, have another look, roughly the same sort of group, or is it likely that Vera Powell, so I mean, you mentioned some of the younger players that have come in, is it likely she'll look to do a bit more experimentation in it?
I think it's a great opportunity for her to do experimentation. If there was one thing I was critical of last campaign was that subs were used very late on. We were seeing introductions at 87 minutes where it's really hard for anyone to impact a game. And as well, there are girls on the team who won't be around forever. I talked about the back three. Obviously, they're really solid. They're going to be really important for us going forward. But they're not going to be around forever. So I'd like to see girls start to get experience. I spoke about it previously. I think it takes almost 10 caps for you to feel really, really comfortable on the international team. So now is the time in these friendlies to blood these players, because you never know, touch wood, someone could get an injury. But I haven't seen too many changes, particularly in that centre half position. So the likes of Clara Reardon, Claire Walsh, there's a few people in there that you'd like to see get some minutes, not only because they deserve the chance, but to give them that experience that when they are called upon that they will be ready. So I'd like to see that again. It should be used as an opportunity to look at players. Obviously, it's been really hard for Vera with COVID and everything. She hasn't gotten to physically go to games. And I was talking to some of the girls after the match today, and what I was seeing on the telly was different to what they were experiencing in the stadium. So it'll be good for Vera to get up close and see what some of the girls can do. I think, like I said, Emily today, really, really impressive. Maybe she'll start the next day. Young Ellen Malloy, we all know the talent that she can have. She's lighting up the Women's National League and probably just needs confidence and needs more game time at that level, and she'll be one for the future. But the future will come around pretty quickly in September when those World Cup qualifiers come in. So we want those girls to be as ready as possible, even if it is just coming off the bench. But yeah, just getting that experience at that level is very important.
Yeah, and you mentioned even Jamie Finn as well, Shelburne player of the match tonight too. So plenty of bright shoots there. Karen, thanks a million for that. We'll catch up with you soon. Thanks a million.
Thanks, Adrian.
Thanks a lot. Karen Duggan on the line there to reflect on Ireland's defeat there tonight in Tallaght. Just a couple of updates and lots of goals over the last few minutes in the Europa League. United 2-0 up at Granada now, a couple of minutes into added time there. Bruno Fernandes from the penalty spot, pretty much sealing that for them. Arsenal had, I told you not that long ago, taken a late lead at home to Slavia Prague. Nicolas Pepe with a goal there, but unfortunately have conceded 4 minutes into added time, and wraps up Arsenal 1, Slavia Prague 1. Vinnie Perth was tipping up Ajax as a potential finalist for the Europa League this season. Well, they've been beaten tonight 2-1 at home to Roma, and again a late goal there. Roger Ibanez with the late goal for Roma. 2-1 it wraps up, and deep into added time between Dinamo Zagreb and Villarreal, and the Spaniards are lead by a goal to nil.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise? The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
The OTB Podcast Network.